This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Jeremy Renner returns to Paramount Plus for a brand new season of the original hit series, Mayor of Kingstown.
My job is to create a balance, avoid a war.
From executive producer Taylor Sheridan, co-creator of Yellowstone.
There's some new players in town, and they brought the plague.
And Antoine Fuqua, director of Training Day.
I know it's always been a war zone, Mike, but this is next level.
The mayor is back in business.
Are you warning me?
You don't want to find out.
Mayor of Kingstown. New season streaming June 2nd. Exclusively on Paramount Plus.
Welcome back to another edition of Through the Smoke, a Miami Hurricanes football and recruiting podcast here on the 24/7 Sports Network. Recording this podcast on Martin Luther King Day. Hopefully we all can remember to be nice and kind to everyone. Love your neighbors, even if they don't love you back. That's a good way to live. Anyways, Gabby, let's start here. You were feeling awful on Friday. How you feeling today? Let's start there.
I feel fantastic. I'm back. I feel re-energized, rejuvenated, and feel alive. So that's the most important part.
Good. So let's jump into it. Let's start with high school recruiting, right? And I don't necessarily even want to start with the official visitors that were at UM over the weekend, because we got to start with the headliner, probably for the rest of this cycle as it closes out on that first Wednesday in February, the traditional national signing day. That is five-star defensive lineman Shamar Stewart, right? He took an unofficial visit to Miami on Saturday, I believe. He was there just one day, right?
Yeah, he was just there on Saturday morning, it feels like.
Just hanging out with, you know, getting more FaceTime with Mario Cristobal, Joe Salavea, and the crew. And sounds like things went well, Gabby.
Yeah, man. I mean, just everything coming out of it. I know he told Andrew Ivins, our 24/7 Sports guy and Through the Smoke alum, that it was his best visit to Miami yet. I think that says a lot, man. I mean, we've talked about here, a ton of just so often about how much time Shamar Stewart has spent at Miami, how often he was sort of around campus, just around the program, really, even, dating back to the summer months in June when in-person recruiting opened back up. So, for him to say that this was his best visit yet, coming on a weekend that, really prior to that, he was expected to be at Texas A&M for another unofficial visit, just sort of all that sort of, coming together and end up sort of working out of Miami's favor in that way, I think is a really, really big deal, man. And, again, this is the guy, if you're signing one guy in February, this is the guy that Miami wants. This is, top number one target, priority A. So to get those words out of his mouth are, and he means those things too. He's not that guy that's sort of like talking to talk. And, when he says something like, "Oh, it was my best visit to Miami yet," like that's something that, I'm believing, because he's the type of guy that he sort of, speaks. I mean, with me, at least, he's always been honest. So, I think that's huge for Miami.
Yeah. So just obviously five-star top 10 guy in the country. Let's just say hypothetically, right? He committed to Miami today. That commitment would jump Miami up in the team rankings from number 36 in the country to number 22. So he would give Miami a shot at a top 20 class. assuming they would add more guys in addition to him, which is crazy to say, right? Considering Miami was what, 68th, eighth in the country when November. So again, that's the Mario Cristobal impact. We've already seen it with three top 100 recruits signed in Cyrus Moss, Nigelie Kelly, Jahlil Skinner. All three of those guys were not even in play for Miami during the Manny Diaz era. So, yeah, I mean, look, it sounds like everything is trending in the right direction, right, Gabby? Again, plenty of time. There's going to be more twists and turns. That's just how it goes with five stars, especially, you know, after the early signing period, because Shamar is one of the best prospects still available in the country, right? But I want to ask, you know, how close are you to putting in a Cristobal? Is your finger on the trigger, or are you still kind of practicing a little patience? Because this week he's going to Georgia.
Yeah.
Might be worth seeing how that visit goes, the shakeout from that. And then the following weekend, you know, the last weekend before National Signing Day, he is taking that trip to Miami. So, you know, right now the Cristobal's on Texas A&M. How close are you to maybe firing in a Miami Cristobal?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, how things stand right now, like, you know, let's say the slate was completely clean. You know, just sort of reading the tea leaves from this month, like, again, I mean, if I were putting one in right now, it would probably be on Miami. Like, I think Miami has the momentum in the recruitment right now. Am I going to do it? I'm not sure if I'm there yet, just because, again, there's still a little bit of time. He is going to get to Georgia. And, you know, I do think Georgia is a player, but I really feel like it might be just be a two-team race between Texas A&M and Miami. Again, let's see how this Georgia visit goes. They just won a national championship, but I'm not sure that 3-4, you know, sort of, you know, scheme is exactly what he's looking for. I do think he's intrigued by Georgia for a multitude of other reasons, but I think, you know, what Miami and what Texas A&M sort of run on defense, I think is probably more of his cup of tea. So that's why I feel like, you know, if he doesn't get back to Texas A&M before he officially visits Miami, because that would be the last weekend they can get anywhere, I think I would feel better, you know, moving my Cristobal over. But if, let's say, he still finds a way to get back to College Station, let's not forget that Jimbo Fisher still has an in-home visit in his back pocket. Sure. You know, I'm not ready to just completely, you know, write off the Aggies. You know, I would still probably peg them as a favorite, but, you know, I'm feeling good about what Miami's doing right now. And I think if you're a Miami fan, I think you could start creeping towards, like, you know, maybe being cautiously optimistic that, you know, Mario Cristobal is able to come through with this and really land this one, because, you know, it feels like it's trending in that direction a little bit.
Let's transition now to the two guys that did make it in for official visits this weekend. Four-star offensive lineman Dave Aiuli, interior offensive lineman from the state of Washington, former Oregon commit, was committed to Mario Cristobal when he was still the coach there, and three-star offensive lineman out of St. Augustine, Florida, Matthew McCoy. More of an offensive tackle body type, more of a developmental guy, which is not a problem at offensive line, right? That's a developmental position. Right. But he does have some intriguing athletic and body type traits to develop. So two offensive linemen made it in this weekend on official visits. What are you hearing? What's the buzz coming out of Miami from those visits?
Yeah, again, you got to feel good about where Dave Aiuli stands and just how that sort of visit went. I think he was really looking forward to it. I think Miami lived up to it. I think Miami probably surpassed every expectation. I mean, you saw the clips. If you haven't seen him yet, he posted a clip on Twitter of him, you know, just like dancing in the little photo shoot area that they do. They did a little video for him. He just seems really energized, really jacked up to be there. And, you know, just sort of talking to people in the building, it felt like he had a really good time. I think coming into the visit, again, I know we talked about it on the podcast on Friday, but it felt like this visit was almost like a confirmation for him to see if this is where he wanted to be. Mario Cristobal, Alex Mirabal, those are his guys. I think that this meeting, you know, this official visit probably just, you know, maybe, you know, solidified things there. Again, He wanted to make a commitment at the Polynesian Bowl this weekend, which he's already at. I mean, if you're kind of reading the tea leaves there, I think it would have meant that he probably would have wanted to pick Miami coming off that visit. But he's not going to do it there. He's going to go visit Oregon, USC. But, I mean, I think right now you have to be feeling like Miami's a favorite. I know people in Coral Gables feel really good there. With Matthew McCoy, again, just getting him back for that second official visit, having him, you know, meet with the new staff and all that stuff, I'm told went really, really well. You know, I think that there is still some concern about Florida. I think that's a team that's viewed as probably the primary competition. I know people from Florida staff went to go see him on Monday, and, you know, they could be the last ones to get him on campus for an official visit. So I think people in, at Miami sort of have their eye on UF to see how that sort of goes. But I think that they felt like they put their best foot forward in this recruitment, and they believe that, you know, what he did with Alex Mirabal in that room, you know, with Mario Cristobal, you know, all those guys there just sort of going through offensive line stuff, you know, watching tape, doing all those types of things that they do on official visits. That apparently went really well. And so, you know, I think that, again, you know, Miami's just kind of win a recruiting battle here. But again, I think they put themselves in a better spot than maybe they were even coming into it. And I think they still felt pretty good coming into it too. So, you know, again, just this is just one that might just go down to the wire, depending on how that final official visit weekend goes.
And expected visitor defensive lineman Grayson Halton, Oregon commit defensive lineman, four-star guy out of San Diego, did not make it in. What's the situation there?
Yeah, so from what I understand, you know, Grayson Halton is an Oregon commit. I was told that, you know, that first day of the contact period, a lot of people from Oregon staff, I think including Dan Lanning, made their way down to San Diego to meet with Jaleel Florence, who was another cornerback we expected at one point before he canceled the official visit. Grayson Halton was also a part of that group too. So, you know, I think that, you know, because they were going to go meet with them, I think they essentially convinced those, I don't know if it was both those guys. I don't know if I want to include Jaleel Florence in this, but I know Grayson Halton wanted to meet with the Oregon staff on that Friday that basically, you know, either pushed back or Miami as a potential official visit spot. So, you know, that was, I believe, the main reason why Grayson Halton didn't officially visit this week. And I talked to someone at his high school. They said that he thought about maybe officially visiting the following weekend. The only problem with that is that that is Miami's Elite Prospect Day. I was told Miami won't host official visitors next weekend. I guess they could host one. I think they floated around the idea of maybe hosting one. And if Grayson Halton really wants to come, I'm assuming that maybe they squeeze him in there. But I'm not sure if that's the direction that they want to go quite yet. So I think we still have to get some clarity on that.
Yeah, that'll be a busy weekend. We'll get into that here more in a little bit. But yep, lots of big time 2023s expected in. Let's talk about a guy who is visiting Miami as we speak on an unofficial visit. Jack Pyburn, coming off an official visit from Auburn over the weekend, wanted to shoot down to Miami. He's a three-star guy out of Jacksonville Bulls. Wrestling guy. You've heard us talk about him here on the podcast in the past. Has there been any buzz about Pyburn? I mean, again, it's still ongoing, but are you hearing anything about that as it's currently going on, Gabby?
Yeah, no, I haven't really heard much about it. You know, I think he gets out. He's going to be finishing up on campus here soon. Hopefully I'm able to catch up with him. But again, I know he's someone Miami really likes. And again, just talking about trenches and all those things that we've talked about in the past, David, I think he's someone that they really like. They're not bringing him in here just to bring him in here. So, you know, I think that this is a dude that they're pretty, pretty high on.
The thing I'm curious about, Gabby, if you can find out from your contacts at Miami, what does he measure in at? I'm just wondering, you know, if he is a legit 6'3" and a half, you know, 265, 260, 255. So I'm curious what the feedback would be on that. Last thing I want to touch on in terms of high school recruiting in the 2022 class, running back, four-star running back, Trevante Citizen out of Louisiana, a former LSU commit, is planning to visit Miami on January 28th, the final weekend leading up to National Signing Day. Same weekend, Shamar Stewart and others will be visiting Miami. Others such as are Mason Thomas, local edge rusher, Ahmad Moten, local D tackle, and Kristen Miller, a four-star defensive lineman out of the state of Georgia.
Josh Connerly, I believe, is coming that weekend too, the five-star offensive lineman out of Seattle. So that's another one that should be there that last official visit weekend.
Big weekend. What do we make of Citizen? Because I know it was kind of a situation where it's like, yeah, he's talking about Miami, but is he really that serious about visiting? What do we make of this visit?
Yeah, I'm not 100% sure what to make of it at this point. I think it's good that you get him on campus. I mean, just when you consider wanting to add a high school running back, I think he's sort of one of the best available on the board right now. You know, again, I think I could see him probably ending up somewhere in the SEC, whether that's Auburn. I think Florida's after him too. I think like schools like Michigan State are after him as well. But again, we've seen what happens when Miami gets guys on campus. And if this is a guy that they really, really want, especially, I know we're going to get into this too, but even after adding a transfer running back into the room. Right. So it's going to, I think I'm wondering how that sort of looks now, you know, with the, with the addition of Henry Parrish and those types of things.
That's fair. Little more crowded running back room than when he set that visit. So maybe that changes things there. Before we take a break, and we'll devote a podcast later in the week to this, but it is Elite Prospect Day week, right? This weekend, a ton of 2023s are planning to descend on Coral Gables. And it's quite an impressive list, Gabby. You've put together a VIP list already on the website going through, you know, who's planning to be there. I'm sure that list will grow between now and Saturday. But I want you to highlight, because I think our podcast is familiar with most of the local guys that are planning to be there. I want you to highlight some of the out-of-state big-time players that are planning to be there, because it's quite an impressive bunch coming from all different areas of the country. So tell us some of the guys from out-of-state that the Hurricanes fans should know about.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to start off with the first one. I mean, just probably the biggest out-of-state name that's coming, that's Jaden Wayne. He's the five-star defensive lineman out of Washington. He has actually been to Miami before. He was at Paradise Camp earlier, I guess, over the summer. So, you know, he's a massive, definitely a massive name to know. Not really out of state, but he's from out of state. He plays at IMG Academy. I'm going to count him as an out of state guy, because I don't think I definitely wouldn't consider him local. Sure. Samuel Mpemba, he's originally a St. Louis native, really close friends with Jahlil Skinner. You know, I think that he's someone that, you know, Miami fans should be really, really excited that he's going to be there. Another tight end type, Mac Markway, again, another kid from St. Louis, 6'4", you know, top five, top six tight end in the country. He's a former Florida commit. So, you know, 6'4", 250 pounds. Another big time tight end, Riley Williams out of the Portland area, number three ranked tight end, 6'6", 230. I mean, there's Monroe Freeling, who's from the South Carolina area, top 247 offensive lineman that, you know, Miami already went to go see on, I believe it was on Friday that they had Cody Woodiel, who's a, you know, offensive analyst that was in South Carolina to see Monroe Freeling. You got, you know, top 247 tight end Jackson Howard, really a bunch of dudes. You know, there's a lot of big time guys coming from out of state. I'm sure we're going to dive into it more, but, you know, there's a big group of local guys, you know, guys from, you know, Orlando South, really. And then there's just definitely a huge group of out of towners, out of state guys that are coming in that, you know, Miami fans are definitely going to want to read up more about, just kind of get to know. Again, we have that running list on the site, and, you know, you can go through all those names, all those different types of dudes that are all coming down here. There's more. It's not just those guys, just highlighted some of the top names that you guys are probably going to want to know of guys that are coming in.
Definitely. Gabby will be all over it all weekend. And it's crazy just how many elite guys this event is already attracting. So again, I this 2023 cycle is going to be fun to follow. I would recommend, if you guys are interested or intrigued by recruiting now that Mario Cristobal is the head coach, jump in, go VIP at InsideTheU.com, because Gabby does a great job covering all of that. So let's take a break, Gabby, on that. And on the other side, we will get into some transfer portal additions Miami added to the roster over the weekend, and just in general, where things stand with some of their transfer portal targets that Miami has been looking at.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, everyone. It's Michael Richards here. You might have seen me on CBS working on their Champions League coverage over the last couple of years. I wanted to tell you about an exciting new podcast that I've been working on. It's called The Rest Is Football. It's me, alongside Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, two absolute legends of the game. The show combines topical debate from the world of soccer along with outrageous tales from our careers. And I mean outrageous. Just search The Rest Is Football wherever you get your podcasts. All the best from Big Meats.
All right, we are back. Gabby, Miami added two guys on the offensive side of the ball via the transfer portal. I feel like you've been hinting at Frank Ladson coming now for what, like a month? I feel like, yeah, you know, just before Christmas.
Yeah.
So he went official, what, on Saturday? And Ole Miss running back, which, you know, you hinted at along with our colleague Chris Stock, on Thursday when he entered the portal, that there was a good chance he would transfer to Miami as well. He officially committed to Miami on Sunday. So let's start with Latson, top 50 recruit coming out of the 2019 class, I believe. Didn't quite live up to that billing from a production standpoint during his time at Clemson. But it should be noted, right, that he's been dealing with, you know, nagging injuries. He's kind of been an injury plagued guy at Clemson. So a little bit of bad luck there for Frank. So transfer portal is a fresh opportunity for him, right? Go to Miami. Miami has a good quarterback now. I know, as a high school recruit, right, Latson was legitimately interested in Miami, but it was important to him to go play where a school had good quarterback play, right? Good quarterbacks. And of course, Trevor Lawrence being at Clemson, that was an easy pick for him. But now it's interesting how, 3 or 4 years later, Miami's quarterback situation is more attractive with Tyler Van Dyke, rather than what, year two of the DJ Uiagalelei era. So I'm rambling, but what do you think Frank Ladson adds to the wide receiver room?
Yeah, you know, I feel like a lot of people are maybe looking at the young wide receivers, just looking at them as guys that maybe need to take that next step. I just think he adds another veteran body. You know, I feel like that's been a positive for the wide receiver room over the past, few years. You consider what KJ Osborne did for, just the receiver room. He elevated the room. The next year, even he sort of helped Mike Harley sort of be that leader type, last year with Charleston Rambo, we saw him come in as a transfer and, he made the receiver room better. So I think Frank Ladson's just another guy that, he just adds that veteran presence, a guy that's played in big games. Again, a guy that's kind of on a mission, guys coming in with something to prove. I think Frank Ladson has a lot to prove. So I think it's an opportunity for, Miami to potentially add. I don't think anyone saw Charleston Rambo maybe being the number one wide receiver for Miami when he came in, but the potential was there. I feel like Frank Ladson, if he's healthy, potentially a number one wide receiver, a guy that can, that again, big 6'3", 200 pounds. David, we've talked about how there's not a lot of those on the roster. So I think he brings something different, a different dynamic. Again, a guy that's played a lot of big games, a lot of big time football, you know, at a program like Clemson's played in a college football playoff game, similarly to Rambo that he played in a college football playoff game. So, you know, I'm excited about just really the experience he brings in and the opportunity to, again, have to prove himself. It's not like we're just, he's not just a guy they're throwing into the room. He's a guy that needs to come in and work to show that he is a guy that can contribute. So I think that again, if he stays healthy, that elevates him too, and it makes the room better.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's a fair way to look at it. Am I convinced he will definitely be a starter? I'm not. I think he most likely will be. But again, he's going to have to go out and beat out like a Romello Brinson, right?
For sure.
Who I think is very talented in his own right. Who do you feel like Latson maybe compares to from a Miami Hurricanes comparison perspective?
I mean, I don't know. I feel like I'm not super good at player comps yet. Like, I feel like I'm still working on that. But I mean, maybe again, I think if he comes together and if he's healthy, I mean, maybe the ceiling could be maybe an Allen Hurns-ish type, you know, okay. Like guys that like, you know, can grow. I know Frank Latson had some track speed coming out of high school. I know Allen Hurns was someone that could run too, both 6'3". I think both could potentially be, you know, red zone targets, guys that catch passes, score touchdowns, and stuff like that for Miami. So, you know, he hasn't been healthy enough, I guess, to draw any like major, you know, praise like that as a guy that caught for over 1,000 yards at Miami. But again,
sure,
from just people that I've talked to, he dealt with two of like the same injuries, and that they believe he's 100% now for the first time in like 3 years, and they think that if he's healthy, like when he's healthy, that, you know, he could be a big time player. So I mean, just following the trends of Miami receivers, I think that he's someone that could potentially, you know, do some good things or have a better stint at Miami than maybe he had at his previous stop.
My comp would be, and Hurns is a good one, my comp would be Tommy Streeter. Tommy Streeter was taller, right? 6'5". Yeah, Latson 6'3". Latson also probably, you know, he's a little thicker than Streeter. But I compare him to Streeter because to me, they're both kind of those big, tall, long striding, go route guys, right? I don't necessarily think, not that they can't do it, but to me, both those guys aren't necessarily like 50-50 ball guys. They're not going to go out and win those 50-50 balls against corners on a consistent basis. They can do it, but to me, their value is throw them a deep ball. They can run under it. You know, when they run on, if they catch it on the run, it's an even longer game. Right. That's what Tommy Streeter was during his productive season. I believe that was his fourth year at UM. He really didn't. I think his first, he was redshirted. Then his first two seasons when he was available to play after that, he caught like 6 passes. And then he exploded his fourth year, catching 46 passes for 800 yards and 8 touchdowns, something like that. So, and I think too, if I remember right, Tommy might have been dealing with a little bit of nagging injuries here and there early in his career. So, I like the Latson addition. I am curious to see how it all plays out. And I agree with the assessment of like, look, if the guy is healthy, he should be the number one receiver. I still think he has some things to improve on in his game. But the same could have been said also of Charleston Rambo. And Charleston Rambo, to me, took his game up 2 or 3 notches during his time at Miami. So if you get that type of jump from Frank Latson too, Miami is going to have a monster on their hands. I'm curious, and this is way early, right? We still got to see how all this plays out. We don't know who the OC is. We haven't seen spring ball, any of this. But who do you think is going to lead Miami in receiving yards in 2022? Who's your early pick?
I don't know, man. You've kind of bought me on Jacoby George. Like, I feel like you're kind of selling me on him. I don't know if he's your pick, but I think he could be a guy that sort of breaks out in 2022.
I don't think that's crazy, right? That would be quite a jump. But yeah, man, the more I see Jacoby, to me, he's just like a smaller Amon Richards.
I'm buying it a little bit. Like, I'm buying the Jacoby George stuff. I mean, he made some crazy plays even in high school. Yes. And I feel like towards the end of last year, he really started to get a lot of looks. So I could see him being a guy. Again, this is super early, so I'm just throwing a name out there.
Very natural receiver. He just makes things look easy. You know what I mean? Snagging one-handed balls. In that Duke game, and again, I know it's Duke, but the one where he caught the ball, turned upfield, and picked up like 30 more yards after the catch, that reminded me so much of Amon Richards. Like, Amon Richards would do that on the regular when he was healthy at Miami.
Yeah.
Amon would also, like, I think it was App State his freshman year. Amon had he did it a bunch of times. I might be mixing it up. But anyways, like, Amon would snag one-handed balls too. To me, like, and again, Amon is 6'1", 6'2".
Yeah.
Jacoby's 5'11", 6 foot. So that difference does matter. But just like, I guess just the movement ability of both those guys is similar. I don't think it's crazy to put Jacoby George there. I think I'm going to go Frank.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to go Frank. You know, hoping that he's healthy.
I think that would be good. Yeah, yeah. I think that would probably be like best case scenario. I think that's what you want.
Right. Right. But honestly, there's a lot. I think Romello Brinson could be in the mix. Here's a crazy thing. Do you know who the leading returning wide receiver in terms of yardage production is?
For Miami?
Yeah.
Is it Restrepo?
Yep. It's not Keyshawn Smith. I think a lot of people would have guessed Keyshawn Smith.
I wasn't going to go with Keyshawn Smith. Oh, even for like yardage leaders, I don't think he was going to be my guy.
Right. So, and I don't know if it's, I'm not saying it's going to be Restrepo, but I mean, he was maybe sneaky productive in a limited role. I do think there's a little bit of a, there's still more room for growth for Keyshawn Smith, right? There's no doubt he's very fast. There's no doubt he's an explosive jumper. I just think he's got to put it all together. There's just something missing for that final, that last little bit that could make him special. And maybe he unlocks that here because, you know, last year was his first year of really playing a significant role. So there is still room for growth there. Let's transition to the running back addition in the transfer portal. Henry Parrish, what do you feel like he adds to the room, Gabby?
I mean, I just think he just brings, I think he's a strong runner. He does it, I feel like quietly is a good pass catcher as well. Didn't really score a lot of touchdowns, but he caught a decent amount of balls at Ole Miss. Again, a guy that's played in SEC against SEC caliber competition, and he's been productive. I mean, he had over 500 rushing yards as basically like the number three back, but behind two other good backs. So, you know, I think he's someone that, you know, definitely is a change of pace type of guy for Miami. Definitely not small. Like, you know, he's not a small guy. I think he's like, I think he's like 5'10", you know, 185-ish or how big is
190.
He? 190. You know, he's a guy that has a capable frame, and, you know, Jalen Knight being a little bit smaller, and Don Chaney maybe being the little bit bigger guy. You know, I think he's a perfect complement to either one of those guys. And again, with Don Chaney, you know, coming off that knee injury, I think Henry Parrish gives you a guy that could potentially give you, you know, I don't know, 15 carries a game, maybe a little bit more, depending on how the sort of situation goes. I think that he's a guy that could be a regular in the rotation, a guy that can help win you games for sure.
Yeah, to me, he brings a different ability than the other two guys with his contact balance, right? I'm not necessarily going to call him a power back, but he is a guy that shows the ability to pick up yards after contact, which, you know, that's not Jalen Knighton's game. Jalen Knighton's about speed, making you miss in space, all that stuff. And I think it's to be determined with Don Chaney Jr. If he necessarily has that ability. We didn't see enough of him this year. But Henry Parrish, to me, is a guy with good vision, patient, can find the holes, which, you know, to me, Jalen Knight and Don Chaney are more like one cutbacks that, you know, get upfield in a hurry. So just a different style. I'm perfectly fine with having a three running back rotation.
For sure.
Unless one of them clearly emerges as, you know, the man. You know, if that does happen, then yeah, you got to ride that horse. But that position's so physical. And look, if you think back to this year, right? Miami was starting the season expecting to have a three-man rotation.
Right.
Cam Harris, Don Chaney, Jalen Knighton. And really, they needed all three guys because, you know, we all know Jalen Knighton started the year with a suspension, missed the first month. Then Don Chaney was lost for the season with an ACL in game two. And then what, game five or six, Cam Harris was lost for the season with a leg injury too. So it's a brutal position. You can't have too many bodies at that position. And yeah, I mean, Henry Parrish is a talented guy in his own right. I'm curious, just based on pure talent, how would you rank the three guys?
Based on pure talent. I mean, I think Jalen Knighton's special. I think we saw that last year. I'd probably go Jalen one. Man, I just feel like when Don Chaney's on, he's good too. I mean, I mean, just based on what we've seen and stuff, I guess I'd probably go Jalen one, Henry Parrish two, and Chaney three. I don't know how you feel about that.
I'd go Jalen one, Chaney two, Parrish three. And really, they're all very close, I think.
They're close in high school too, which is really cool.
Right. I just think, like, if they're running a race, I think Jalen and Don are the two fastest. And I think Henry's third, right? So, but Henry's game is different, right? Like I said, he's kind of more about vision, patience, contact balance. Do you have a UM comp for him, for Henry?
I don't know. I mean, for Henry, I thought maybe like Travis Homer, like he kind of just like a guy that's just going to, again, sort of embrace the contact, sort of bounce off. Like I was even watching like his Columbus highlights and it just kind of like, you know, like a one cut guy and he's just able to make a move and definitely not shy of contact or anything like that. And I don't know. I don't know if that's a good comp, but I mean, he's someone that I just thought maybe.
I'd go Joe Yerby.
Joe Yerby. I think Joe Yerby's smaller though.
He is. He's smaller like in height. But, you know, 5'10", 190. Joe Yerby, I think, was 5'9", 195-ish.
I guess that could work.
So, and they play the same way, right? Vision, patience, not necessarily the fastest guy, but guys that
yeah, I guess Homer was really fast, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Homer's pretty fast.
I would probably, like, if you're making me compare Homer to some one of these three, I would compare him maybe to Don.
Okay, that's fair.
Not a perfect comp, but if I'm forced to make a comp to one of those three, that's who I would compare him to. But yeah, Parrish to me, and look, Joe Yerby was a good player in his own right for Miami.
Oh, for sure.
He ran for 2,000 yards during his career. He had a 1,000-yard season.
He did. Wow.
Yeah, he started his career, right, as Duke's backup. Then he had his 1,000-yard season as the lead back, and then he was the backup to Mark Walton. So good complimentary back, which, look, if Henry Parrish turns out to be Joe Yerby, that's definitely a good thing. So I bet we'll be on the same page here, but who would you predict to lead Miami in rushing yards in 2022?
Yeah, I'm still probably going to go with Jalen Knighton. I still think he'll be the guy.
Same.
Yeah.
Would you be surprised? It sounds like you would be surprised if it was Don.
I would. I don't know. I just feel like he has to get healthy, and I feel like he has to just show that he can stay healthy and stuff. So
yeah,
I feel like that's sort of just my issue with Don is like a durability thing. It's not like a talent thing.
Right.
Because when he puts it together, I mean, he's special. I mean, we've seen him break some of those runs, and it's just like, yeah, you could see it. But I think you need to see it. Like, if you can't do it every week, I mean, so if Don Chaney's healthy, I'm super excited about it.
I'm with you. I think Jalen will likely be the leading rusher in 2022, but honestly, it could be any of those three, depending on.
And that's what's exciting, injuries. And that's what I feel like is so exciting about the addition of Henry Parrish is that, you know, any one of these three guys could end up being the guy, or all three can just complement each other really well, and you can just throw the freshest one in there, and you're still seeing, you know, different sort of the same levels of production and stuff like that with just their little, you know, what they are specifically good at. You know, you could sort of capitalize off their strengths individually at different parts of the game and keep them all fresh at the same time. So again, and you get one gets hot and you ride the other one, and then you have the other two, you know, rested up, and Jalen Knighton is sort of like a, you know, the joystick that you can just sort of move around everywhere. And, you know, I think there's a lot of exciting things that you can do with those guys.
Let's move on to transfer portal targets. And we don't have to talk too much, just like, and maybe there isn't necessarily anything new going on there, but maybe just some quick hitter updates on these guys. Let's start with cornerback DJ James.
Yeah, DJ James committed to Auburn. I kind of hinted on the message board that was probably the most likely scenario. Even while he was on his official visit, it still felt like Auburn was probably where he wanted to be. That was just talking to people, you know, well, first reading the tea leaves that he had visited Auburn previously, and then just talking to people that are both familiar with DJ James and, you know, just people familiar with what the situation was. Felt like Auburn was probably always going to be the landing spot there with him.
Antonio Moultrie.
Yeah, I think it was notable that he didn't commit to Miami coming off that official visit. Again, just talked to someone in his camp, and they said that, you know, kind of hoped that Miami was going to be the spot, and, you know, if everything went well, that they could probably, you know, wrap things up there. I'm not sure what other visits he's going to take. I'm not sure what else is going on there, but I do think it's pretty notable that, you know, he just didn't commit to Miami yet, or hasn't committed anywhere.
This is just me speculating, right? Do you think there's any disconnect between, like, it sounds like Miami prefers him as an interior guy, but he played early on at UAB, right? But then this past year, he dropped a ton of weight and played on the edge. Do you think he'd prefer to play on the edge, or is that not an issue, you don't think?
It could be something that maybe they wanted him to be more of an edge guy or anything like that. And Miami, I know Miami sees him more as an interior guy, and if he wants to be more of a pass rusher or just outside type of guy like that, I'm not sure if that's something Miami really expects from him or wants from him in that role. So, I mean, that could be a part of the disconnect.
How about Tyler Steen, who is a offensive tackle starter? He started at left tackle mainly for Vanderbilt. He went to St. Thomas Aquinas, right, Gabby?
Yeah, he played at St. Thomas Aquinas, and he played a ton of football at Vanderbilt. I know Miami's still working on that. I know he's someone that they're definitely interested in. Definitely someone they're trying to, you know, figure something out with, whether it's get him on campus for an official visit or whatever it is, or they're just communicating with him. I know that he's someone that they definitely like.
And there's a new linebacker on the radar. Tell us what's going on there.
Yeah, that's a Louisiana Lafayette linebacker, Lorenzo McCaskill. You know, at one point, like, you know, coming out of high school, I think he was considering Ole Miss. He was committed to Cincinnati at one point. He ended up going JUCO, you know, then became a two-time all-conference linebacker at Louisiana. He just entered the transfer portal. He was the team's leading tackler. Again, this is Billy Napier's Louisiana. So, you know, if Florida gets involved, I think that would be notable. But I know I don't think Miami's offered yet, but I think that they have expressed interest. I think USC and Missouri have already offered. So watch out to see if Miami actually pulls the trigger on an offer, because I think he's someone that they're doing their homework on.
6'2", 223 linebacker. 83 tackles in 2020, yeah. 84 tackles in 2021. So kind of proven production there. And then I'm curious, is there anything on Latavius Breeny? Anything new there?
I'm not sure if there's anything new. I know he officially hit the portal today. So I think that means that he could actually contact him. Schools are actually free to contact him, because you can say you're entering the portal, and I don't think you can actually be contacted until you're officially in the portal. So I know as of Monday afternoon, he's officially in the portal. I do expect Miami to, you know, contact him and to see what they can work out there. Again, you sort of seen trends in the transfer portal in terms of, you know, guys going home to the areas that they're from. Saw it with Jason Jones and DJ James to Auburn, both of them from Alabama. We've seen that with Miami, with Jake Lichtenstein, Frank Ladson, and Henry Parrish, all from South Florida. Latavius Breeny, Hialeah Matter Academy. So, you know, I think this is a guy that, you know, Miami might try to attack in the portal. Again, big nickelback, you know, for Miami fans, maybe more of a striker. So you think in that sort of role. Again, we don't know what the new defense is exactly going to look like, but, you know, can be maybe be like a star, one of those types of guys that, you know, moves around or, you know, just sort of works in slot.
Any other transfer guys I missed, or is that all we need to touch on now?
I mean, that's basically it. I think one more intriguing name is Lee Hunter. He's a, you know, former top 100 defensive lineman out of Auburn. He signed in the 2021 class. He's a true freshman, 6'5", like 290. Auburn's defensive line coach, I believe, just left to Clemson. So Lee Hunter decided to enter the portal. I mean, this is a big dude. Again, just former top 100 recruit, a big guy, defensive lineman. I think Miami's definitely intrigued. It's going to be interesting to see if they can actually get involved or where he sort of ends up. But I think he's probably a name that's worth at least keeping in mind is Lee Hunter.
Cool. Let's talk NIL, because Sunday night, early Monday morning, some interesting announcements were made in terms of Miami players signing deals with John Ruiz's company, Life Wallet, right? Very generous amounts, right? They basically named 10-ish Miami Hurricane football players and what their deals will be worth. And it was kind of validated by First Round Management, who's a local agency for football, MMA, et cetera. And the Rosenhaus Sports Group also said, yeah, we represent these players. And this is big time, blah, blah, blah. So just running over some of the guys, what they're getting. Tyler Van Dyke, 50K, Leonard Taylor, 50K, Gilbert Frierson, 50K, James Williams, 42, Cam Kitchens, 42, you know, Romello Brinson, 36. So different levels of deals, Zion Nelson, 42. And John Ruiz and his family have kind of made it clear on Twitter that they've set aside $10 million for NIL deals. You know, look, I know there's a lot of skepticism around the Ruiz family. I think that's fine. I think there should always be skepticism with, you know, new stuff like this, right? This is all kind of coming out of nowhere. But the way that the Ruiz family can prove themselves is action, right? And so it looks like that this action is happening, and it's really cool to see. Gabby, what's kind of your takeaway by the latest on this NIL front?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we talked about it, you know, one of these podcasts, maybe it was like the one of the signing day ones, of just like, you know, you'd like to see someone from Miami sort of step up and, you know, sort of, we're talking about the Texas that every offensive lineman gets $50,000, right? And right. You know, some of these other NIL deals that we've seen across the country, like I think Miami, you know, has someone that's willing to front put up some money to get, you know, obviously, you know, real money. That's like legitimate money that these kids are making. You know, even some of the smaller ones, the 36, even $30,000 that like Don Chaney got, like, you know, that's something that matters. You know, I think I think I saw Andres Borregales got one too. I mean, just in that,
yeah, there's more coming. Alone,
Yeah, just in that group alone, that's over $500,000 worth of NIL money, you know, being poured into, you know, the football players at the University of Miami. So, you know, from when you're a recruit and you're seeing, hey, every you know, football players are making X amount, and then these guys, you know, the top performers are getting X amount, you know, I can come in here and play as a top recruit and know that I'm going to make at least this. And, you know, I think it's a, you know, it's a part of the way that the sport's going. And I think it's good that Miami's sort of at the forefront of this in terms of just actually being able to get money into their players' pockets. So again, you know, I think it's great. I think it works. And, you know, again, hope again, it's just about action. It's just about people are going to, it's going to be met with skepticism. People are going to have their opinions and people are going to say what they're going to say. But again, the way that, you know, the Ruizes sort of dispel all of that is just by doing it and just, you know, continuing to do it and do it for the right reasons and all those types of things. And as long as that maintains, then, you know, this is going to be a big win for the University of Miami and those athletes.
And it is, I think it is smart, by the way, to put the number of the deals out there.
For sure.
And why do I say that? Because look, technically due to state of Florida rules and all that stuff, NIL cannot be used as a recruiting inducement, right? But how you can use it in recruiting is you just say, hey, five-star defensive lineman from Dade County, whose name might be Shamar Stewart. Look, we can't promise you anything, but I mean, look at this article and, you know, look at what these agents are tweeting about. We pay our players $50,000, et cetera, et cetera. So that's how you can speak to recruits via NIL, right? You can't necessarily agree to anything before they are UM students because of the way that the rules are structured now. But, you know, you can speak to them through the media. And so that's why I think it's smart to put the numbers out there like this. And yeah, like you said, hopefully everything is just handled the right way. Hopefully everything is legit and followed through. And, if that is the case, it's not going to take Miami long to, stack elite talent because, as we all know, who wouldn't want to live in Miami? Let's move on to some coaching updates. We don't really have much in terms of like names. Right. But first, Gabby, let's start with a member of the current UM coaching staff. I mean, we've discussed it many times here on the podcast and on the website. You know, it's a situation that's up in the air, right? We've made it clear that Alabama and Georgia are teams to watch for Trevarius Robinson. We've made it clear that Trevarius Robinson, you know, the plan is to stay at Miami unless he gets straight up offered a job at Alabama or Georgia, right? There aren't many programs that would be considered an upgrade for Miami for T-Rob to jump to. But I think it's fair to say as things stand right now, that's a situation he'd have to explore and potentially jump at. So I know you've done some digging on that. What's kind of the latest on your understanding on that situation?
Yeah, I'm feeling like Alabama might be the bigger threat right now. You know, I think that he's a guy that, that Trevarius Robinson is a guy that Nick Saban wants. You know, Jay Valai, I think his name is, just left to Oklahoma. There is an opening on that Alabama staff. I think, you know, I'm not sure if T-Rob is maybe candidate. I'm not sure he could be the top candidate, but I know he is a candidate for the Alabama job. And, you know, from what I understand, he has a decision to make. So I think it's very possible that he has a standing offer from Alabama. Again, I'm not sure that that's like a guarantee, but I was told that, you know, T-Rob has a decision to make. So for whatever that's worth, I know Nick Saban's sort of coming after him and, you know, again, it's Alabama, so T-Rob is a career SEC guy. You know, obviously Miami is his hometown, but I'm not sure how much time he's actually spent down here, other than his stint at Miami, or his time now at Miami. So, you know, it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. I do think that there's a chance that he stays, but, you know, turning down Alabama is never easy, especially from a coach. Sure. We've seen how that leads to success and how quickly some of those coaches end up climbing the ladder in terms of, you know, maybe even becoming head coaches themselves one day, defensive coordinators, all those types of good things. So, just kind of got to continue to monitor that UROP situation.
And you wrote an update Friday about, you know, how Mario Cristobal is going to be patient, right, with hiring his coordinators in particular. What's your sense on that? Is it fair to say maybe, you know, offensive coordinator, he's going to give NFL guys a really strong look and wait for that carousel to play out, however long that takes at the NFL level. DC maybe might end up being college guys. Is that fair to say?
Yes, I think it's definitely a possibility. You know, I do feel like, again, probably on defense, they might be a little bit closer. Does that mean that there's probably a college guy they like? I would probably say yeah, but I just think at this point, it's just you might as well wait and see what else is going to be out there. I think, again, priority right now is going to be recruiting. So I think that this only delays the process a little bit more. So yeah, with the process, you know, with the focus being on just the talent acquisition portion of this, you know, I think it's going to basically allow the timeline to go to get to a point where, you know, a week, 2 weeks of the playoffs basically go through. And then there's going to be, you know, again, more coach, just a larger pool of coaches, you know, from the NFL and stuff like that. So I just think we're at a point where it's just sort of wait and see what happens. And, you know, let's see what it looks like maybe even after signing day. I wouldn't be surprised if, like, Miami does not have, at least specifically an offensive coordinator. You know, if it goes that long, I wouldn't be, like, shocked. I'm not saying it will go that long, but I wouldn't be, like, totally, like, oh, my gosh. Like, I can't believe this. Stunned. If we're, you know, sitting here on February 2nd and Miami doesn't have an offensive coordinator.
He hired Andy Avalos at Oregon as his defensive coordinator on February 25th or something like that, right? So almost a full month after signing day. And I've written on the website, you know, just Mario Cristobal's process of interviewing coordinators. He puts them through a grueling interview process.
It's, you know, a gauntlet
I've been told it's like 5 hours long. They watch film together. He pokes holes in the film. He really, you know, puts these guys' feet to the fire. See how they handle it. He also wants to know that they're going to be willing recruiters, et cetera, et cetera. So you're right. Like if the focus now is on recruiting, just knowing his interview process, that doesn't leave much time in the day to do both. And yeah, I mean, look, I agree with, particularly at offensive coordinator, I agree with letting the NFL carousel play out, because there are some intriguing names at the NFL level that Mario should give a strong look to, I think.
Do you have any that, like, really stand out to you?
You know who I really like is I like Brian Johnson.
Yeah.
The Eagles quarterback coach. He was Dan Mullen's offensive coordinator at Mississippi State and Florida. He was also the offensive coordinator at Utah prior to that. I think he was the OC there when he was like 24 years old or something. But he's considered like a big time rising star. I assume he would want, you know, he wants to be a play caller, right? So that's probably the next step in his career. Does he want to come back down to college? I don't know. I don't get the sense that he's a guy that's like anti-college. In fact, he was kind of known as like a pretty good recruiter. When he was recruiting quarterbacks for Dan Mullen. So I'm intrigued by that one. You know, I think the Dan Mullen offense would also kind of fit what Mario Cristobal is interested in. You know, Dan Mullen ran a balanced offense. He showed the ability to build the attack around the strengths of his personnel, whether it's a running quarterback or a passing quarterback. So I like Brian Johnson. There's more. I mean, obviously Ken Dorsey, if Ken Dorsey doesn't get a play calling
after that demolishing of the Patriots, I think Ken Dorsey's coaching his way out of like that range.
Yeah, I mean the feeling there is he wants to stay at the NFL level, right? Yeah. And he thinks he can get an OC job soon, which I think is probably correct. So, I mean, that would be a lot of fun.
Definitely would be.
Any names you like at the NFL level?
I mean, I think I don't know how like prepared I am to say this, but I mean, I think Spencer Whipple, man. I mean, I'm just like the Cliff Kingsbury offense is, I mean, just the Arizona Cardinals, Cliff Kingsbury sort of tree, you know, him being a part of that and all that stuff and understanding it. Again, if you're looking to go, this is like assuming Miami stays spread high up tempo, which I'm not certain that they do. But I mean, he's so.
But
he's,
I'll say this: like his dad. Well, I don't know. Like when his dad was at Miami, they ran a pretty balanced offense. Yeah. At Pittsburgh, I mean,
I feel like he opened it up.
He did, but you could also say like they didn't really have great backs, so right. Maybe he was playing to the strengths of his personnel. You could argue like Spencer, you know, might be on that Joe Brady trajectory. Right. Like wide receiver ish coach that, you know, can dial it up.
Yeah. Well, he did just dial it up.
He did call plays in a game. You saw that.
Yeah. They're on point, weren't they?
Yeah. When Kingsbury was down with COVID for a game this year, he had Spencer Whipple call plays for that game.
That's notable to me. Like if Cliff is asking this guy to call plays, like, I'm sort of about that.
Yeah. No, I'm intrigued
by
him too.
I just say this, the name Spencer Whipple, and I just think of like Spencer Whipple, and I'm just like, no. But then I have like my head that's telling me yes. And I'm just like, all right.
No, I like it. I think it'd be a cool hire.
Not the Miami quarterback people would be hoping to hire. But
right. It does make me feel old. I also, you know, there's, you know, Joe Brady's still out there, right? I mean, let's just say Joe Brady doesn't get an NFL OC opportunity like he expects. Mario isn't against like circling back around on guys too, I think. And there's probably more out there that we aren't talking about now that would be good fits. News never stops. It's that time of year. We will have another podcast here diving in at a deeper level on the Elite Prospect Day this weekend. Probably run that podcast maybe Thursday afternoonish. And we might even have a subscription deal.
Maybe.
That weekend. So, big day ahead. Elite Prospect Day, tons of talent descending on Coral Gables. Appreciate everyone listening. Hopefully everyone's enjoying themselves on this long weekend. And till next time, take care.
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount Plus. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
To the can model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount+.